Okay. It is September 28, 2010, and we're doing Organization and Culture Part 2.
Where'd they go?
I don't know. It's not my problem. Not your problem. We're going to look a little bit more at the four types of organizational culture that are identified. Again, these are mostly looked at for business. The clan culture, the adhocracy, the hierarchy, and the market. And I think now you can see we're talking about flexibility and discretion, external positioning.
Discretion
means decision.
Discretion, having judgment. If you have discretion, you have judgment. So flexibility and discretion, it means much more you're judging each case on its own merit. You're making decisions based on time, place, and circumstance on a case-by-case basis. And control and stability, you have general rules that are applied in all cases. Mm-hmm. So this is, from up to down, is how flexible and how rigid the organizational culture is. So the top two are very flexible. The bottom two are very stable. Then the two on the left are mostly concerned with the internal organization, and the two on the right are mostly concerned with how the organization interacts with those outside of it. So here you have something that's flexible and internal. Here you have something that's what?
Stable.
Stable and?
Internal.
Here you have something that's? Flexible and? External. Here you have something that's?
Stable
external. So this is stable external, flexible external, flexible internal, stable internal. Now, tomorrow when we look at organizational structure, we're also going to be looking at things such as flexibility and stability. So this is how much does the organization say, okay, this is the way we do it, this is always the way we do it, these are our rules, this is what we're going to follow. And how much is the organizational culture one of, well, we do things according to individual circumstances. And then the other is how much is the organization's main focus is dealing with people outside the organization, selling them a product, or doing something for people outside the organization, how much we focus for doing internally. So if you had to choose, would you say that ISKCON is more a stable organization or a flexible organization?
Stable. Sometimes they have positions that they just fill. Maybe it's even, it also depends on where. I mean, micro is one way and like a smaller place.
That's certainly true. But let's look at ISKCON as a whole, which I know is difficult because there's a lot of subcultures. But let's look at ISKCON as a whole. Is it more a question of we have this procedure for how we do things, this is how we do things, this is the rule we follow, this is the way it's done, or is it more that, well, we're going to decide in each circumstance how we do things? Which is the dominant?
It's international society for kindness and consideration. So some people make this joke.
Okay, flexible doesn't necessarily mean kindness and consideration at all.
Flexible.
It's not that being flexible is more kind and being stable is less kind. We're not only talking here about kindness or cruelty. But a control and stable organization is one which has policies and rules and ways of doing things, and that's how things are done. A flexible organization is one that decides what to do according to the particular individual circumstances and the particular people. One is not more kind or less kind than the other.
No, what would be a unstable one?
You could be a highly flexible organization that was very cruel, and you could be a very stable organization that was very kind. You could have stable cruelty, And you could have stable kindness, and you could have flexible cruelty and flexible kindness. I could just randomly shoot people. You know? I could have a stable policy of torture, and I could just randomly shoot people. I could have a stable policy of caring for people according to certain procedures, and I could care for people according to their individual circumstances. So it's nothing to do with care or not care.
It sounds pretty circumstantial.
I'm just, to me, the flexible or stable is, like you're saying, it's either, it's the way that we project ourselves versus what we are.
Let's talk about what we are.
Or
what are we? Is ISKCON run essentially according to rules and procedures, or is ISKCON run mostly according to what fits the circumstance?
What fits the circumstance, but there's also rules and procedures, but I mean, they're not there. But
what do you think is more dominant?
Circumstance.
Or let's say, what do we use the rules and procedures for? What area of ISKCON is governed by rules and procedures? What areas?
Deity worship.
Deity worship. What other areas are governed by rules and procedures? Looking at ISKCON as a whole.
Initiation.
Okay. There's some variation.
Sannyasi.
Who becomes a sannyasi? Okay. There's definitely a strict procedure.
Well, basically, they start making these laws once after. First, initially flexible, and then...
We'll study that tomorrow, how organizations tend to become less flexible as they get older. Just like material bodies tend to... Seriously. Tend to become less flexible. And people's mentality... Young people tend to be more flexible than older people. Not just in their bodies, but in their minds. In their ways of doing things. Older people tend to be more conservative. And older organizations tend to be more conservative. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. We talk about structure. What sort of things are in ISKCON are done on a very individual, ad hoc basis, where we decide what we're going to do according to the circumstances, the people?
Just if it's a punishment.
Punishment and reward is
different. How we preach.
How we preach. What are our preaching methods?
Cooking.
How are we preaching?
Cooking. That is definitely true. That didn't used to be that way. Now, there's an example of something that in the early days of ISKCON was very standardized and has become very flexible, how we cook. There was a time in ISKCON that anywhere you went, you'd pretty much get the same food. What other areas are very flexible in ISKCON? How we preach, how we punish and reward.
How you sin.
Sing.
Oh, sing. Okay, kirtan styles.
Also, who sing?
Hmm?
I mean, also, like, difference between men and women.
Okay, so how the men and women relate to each other is very flexible.
We dance,
definitely.
How we receive guests.
Okay, hospitality. Oh. Any other areas of... We have a chair? Any other areas of ISKCON culture that are very flexible?
Who we let come in.
Who we let come in. That's a lot to do with the punishment and reward system. So when we say punishment and reward, we're also talking about who can become a member, how do you get status, how do you get position. Okay. So then we're going to look at organizational culture in terms of, are we mostly concerned with internal, or are we mostly concerned with external? Are we mostly concerned with our own members, or are we mostly concerned with outreach? What would you say is dominant?
Sometimes it seems we sacrifice some internal for external, but internal also very important.
What do you think is the primary importance of it?
At the same time, we hear also that it's like a huge, like it's a thing that when you go external, it also works internal. So, I mean, that's explanations that are given at least.
as far as on the individual level, that when you preach externally, it helps you develop internally. But as a society, what's our culture in the society? What's more important? What we're doing for the outside society or what we're doing for our own members? What's more important? What's the higher value?
I mean, as you're explaining the top 10 reasons people leave, it would seem that it would follow in that nature that people, we focus more on external and therefore our internal is fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts?
It's just again like the disconnect.
People who, okay, let's look at again, people who have status in ISKCON, the heroes of ISKCON, the people who get rewarded, are they mostly people who take care of the internal or the external?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at that in terms of flexibility and stability. Who do we give more rewards and status to? People who play by the rules or people who are flexible?
Depends on.
Do you see the issue of being respected? They take out their level, whereas people like the mercy cases.
People who are the heroes in ISKCON and get status and get rewards and. Are they mostly people who are innovative and creative and flexible? Are they mostly people who are just solid and steady and they just do what they're supposed to do? Who do we give more? Who gets more status? We certainly give to both, but who gets more status?
Solid.
Okay, why don't you give me some examples of heroes in this country?
As you said, Ayendra.
I'm talking about internationally. People who have high status internationally, not just in a local area.
Radhanaswami.
Huh?
Radhanaswami.
Is he an innovator or he's stable? Definitely an innovator. Ayendra, which one was he?
He was innovative.
Definitely innovative. Risk taker.
Flexible,
creative. I mean, he was very steady in his service. Definitely very steady in his service. Radhanaswami is also a very stable person, but as far as we're talking about someone who just plays by ISKCON's rules or someone who tries something new and flexible, those are both people who tried new flexible things. Shivaram Swami, okay. Would you say that someone who plays by the rules or someone who does things that are new and flexible? How well do you know him? He pushes pushes the limit of the envelope all the time. Shivaram Swami.
All those with fair numbers for him.
Oh, really? He likes a lot of creativity and.
Well, no, he pushes you to the limit of breaking down.
I'm not breaking down. But he does a lot of things there that aren't being done in the rest of ISKCON.
I was just thinking, because I'm trying to see both male and female, and when it comes to the feminine side, I keep seeing only people that I would consider stable as.
Well, we might reward men and women differently.
And that, yeah, I think so.
We might have our organizational culture might be very different for men and for women. That's quite common. We might have completely different standards for males and females.
Because I'm thinking of Vishakha or just so many other Matajis, and they're always giving the status because they follow the rules in what.
How well do you know Vishakha? Talking about Yadugar's wife?
Yeah. I mean, in one sense. I think external.
Okay, you're talking about somebody who spent her youth traveling all over the world.
As a photographer.
and who was probably one of the only women who was up there with the men all the time around Srila Prabhupada.
But that's external. Internally, well, I mean, rules-wise, it seemed like...
Well, but as far as... I mean, she definitely... If you're going to talk about that we give a lot of respect to people such as that in Malati, I mean, those were very high-risk-taking people.
Well, in stability, at least for the last years, maybe not in the beginning, Mother Yamuna is in that sense, you know, all this thing with Dinapu and Sharanagati and maybe just taking care of the community there. And being very
is that the main reason she has status in ISKCON as a whole?
No.
No.
Reputation carries from before?
Yes. In fact, I would guess that the majority of people in ISKCON haven't the foggiest notion of what she does now. So I really doubt if you ask them, what does Jamuna do now, where does she live, they wouldn't know. They might know that she started ISKCON in London, and they probably know that she sings the Govinda prayers, and maybe she traveled in India, but they're not going to know that she just hangs out in Sharanagati. No, I don't think so. Any other people of high status and heroes? Bhakti Tirtha Swami.
He is like the embodiment of mobile creating.
Yes, definitely. High flexibility. Jayapataka Swami, another one.
Yeah, there's different things in different places.
Highly flexible person and someone very innovative, starting the whole Namahata. And yeah.
And which different forms of Namahata.
Very yes, that's right. Different forms in different cultures.
Different places.
In spite of tremendous opposition and criticism.
Yes.
Which is what I suppose makes them heroes.
Yes. So okay. So people who over. So we also see as heroes and give high status to people who overcome opposition. Any other examples of people who are international, of international high status?
When you take like a major kirtan, yeah, like Madhava, who's every single person who's come.
Okay, so somebody who's probably close to Ayendra, status, or Sri Prahlad.
Indrajumna Swami.
So predominantly our heroes are what? In the control and stability or the flexibility and discretion area?
Flexibility.
So that's telling me that although we have control and stability in some things, for example, you're going to find pretty much the same morning program in every temple in ISKCON. Pretty much. With some very, very slight variations. But you can pretty much go to any ISKCON temple and you can know what the morning program is going to be. Yeah, it says slight. Very, very slight. Or, you know, anyway, there's, but they're very small things, they're not major things. So we have certain things, such as the deity worship that has some sort of, some sense of stability, morning program, the vows for initiation. But our organizational culture in general seems to be favoring flexibility and discretion.
Also, when you see different publishing things, authors, they are basically very much detailed. Different authors, they have different, completely different approach, how they present
Krishna consciousness.
Whatever they're writing, or being devoted, sometimes it's more direct, sometimes it's less.
But we're not just talking about what happens with organizational culture. We're talking with
some good authors, famous authors. They have they're quite special.
Okay, so this is sort of the purpose of organizational culture. Let's get back to what organizational culture is again. It says, how is one organization different from another? It gives you a sense of the identity of the organization. What is this organization about? What's its mission? What's its goal? What's its purpose? It gives a sense of identity for the members. I am a member of this kind of organization. It generates commitment. It gives some stability to the social system. So you can say, well, how can a flexible organizational culture give stability? But you understand what kind of an organization is. You understand what to expect, even if what you're expecting is flexibility. Do you understand what I'm saying? If I know that I'm going to get status, rewards, and punishment depending upon the judgment of the local leaders, then what I have to expect is if I want to get status and reward, then I've got to do things that are going to please the local leaders. I know that I can expect that. It serves as sense-making control mechanism for fitting employees in the organization. So how do I become a member? How do I fit in? How do I make sense of the organization? And these are some of the areas of organizational culture. How much is there creativity and flexibility? How much do we pay attention to detail? Where are we going? Are we mostly interested in our mission? Are we mostly interested in people? Are we mostly interested in a team? How aggressive are we? How stable are we? So it looks to me, and this is really interesting for me because what we've come up with, if ISKCON is primarily built on, if we primarily value flexibility and we primarily value outreach and creativity, then that means to a large extent we have an adhocracy culture.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah, that's why.
Now, if we have an adhocracy culture, that's of great interest to me, Ramila Devi Dasi, because I have been promoting having an adhocracy structure for a long time. Now, I would like to know, culture is not always the same as structure. I'd like to know, do we say that this is the kind of culture that we have? Remember on the other slides you were talking about what we say we have and what we actually have? That we say we have a culture where we just go by the wisdom of the elders and everything's very linear and everybody has their place. But actually we have a culture where we work in groups and people fight it out and individuals take responsibility. What kind of culture do we say that we have in ISKCON?
I'm just wondering if it's ever favorable for them to even say that you have this kind of culture. Because if you're saying you just focus on everyone else, not everyone.
Well, it's not just. It's where your emphasis is. You can't just focus on your internal or just focus on your external. It's just like we're not going to find that every area of ISKCON has flexibility. We've said that there are areas of ISKCON that are extremely stable and are extremely rule-bound. But it's we're talking about here, where's your emphasis? But do we tell people that our emphasis is on external preaching in innovative, creative ways? Do we say that that's the essence of what ISKCON is about, of what our culture is about?
We always talk about inner spiritual upliftment and such, which is very internal and is very individual.
Okay, so we talk a lot about
that.
We're
an organization that's colorful. We say we're colorful, but we display that. But we display that we are here for individuals. And
so what that sounds like we're doing is when we're going to people outside the culture, the way that we're bringing them in is by telling them that you come in and it will, and it's all about you when we come in. But when you come in, you find out it's more about going out. So it's like our focus is on the outside, to bringing people in, saying, okay, this is going to be about you. And then when you come in, you find out it's not about you, it's about going out and telling more people it's about you.
Yeah, that doesn't sound so good.
Well, that's why it's not a good idea to be dishonest about your organizational culture. Now, as far as how we do take care, or how do we tell people? Do we tell people that it's going to be about them in a very individual, flexible way, or do we tell people it's going to be about them in a very organized, hierarchical way with a lot of stability and a lot of rules? So if we say we're about internal development and about our own members, do we say that that's done in a very controlling, stable way, or is that done in a very individual, flexible way?
I don't think it's that stable, especially in the beginning. We give people, it's like smaller involvement, and then gradually the involvement increases. And it's not so, it's not like a trap. I don't think
okay.
So,
but are we? Well, do we? I don't think it's a trap either. I'm not condemning anything. I'm just trying to understand it. Because I think if you can't. You can't look at where we want to go. Okay, this is a maxim of anything and everything. We're going to give you the key to life here, folks. Seriously. Not joking. But this is the real deal. It's a pizza. The meaning of life is a pizza.
Right.
This is the essence of life, folks. Know where you're going, be able to tell whether or not you're getting there, and if you're not, change something. That's it, right here in a nutshell. Okay? Know where you're going. Be able to judge that story repeated, this kind of history is a nice example of being able to know how you're getting there. Right? That the steps that what's his name makes?
Chutananda.
So the steps that Chutananda makes from Shraddha to praying. You should know the signpost. You know, if I'm driving from here to Brussels, I got to know the signs to see if I'm getting there or if I'm going to Amsterdam instead. And then if I see that I'm going to Amsterdam instead of Brussels, I got to be willing to change. I can't keep doing what I want to do. Or another way to say this is, where am I going? Where am I now? Mm. What's the path? Yeah, something like that, isn't it? So what we're doing right now is sambandha. We're figuring out where we are now. And I'm trying to do that without judgment, without saying that where we are now is good or bad. Because as soon as we go into judgment, then we're going to be answering the questions by what we think it should be rather than what is. Is that clear? I don't want us to be answering these questions about ISKCON's organizational culture by what we think ISKCON's organizational culture should be. Because in order to first get what ISKCON's organizational culture should be, I first gotta know where in the heck I am. Mm-hmm. If I pretend that I'm over there, then I'm gonna get the wrong path. Duh. If I ask you how to get to Brussels, I'm sorry, I'm a little emotional about this. I'm so frustrated sometimes. If I want to get to Brussels and I call you up and ask you for directions and I want you to have, you know, to think more highly of me, so I pretend that I'm just 10 kilometers out of the city, you're going to give me the wrong directions because you're not going to know where I am. So there's no shame in being honest about where you are. You can't do anything unless you're honest about being where you can. How are you going to know whether to go straight or turn left or right if you don't know where you are? So all these questions I'm asking us to discover, and I'm not coming to this class with some preconceived idea about what these answers are, by the way. I'm not guiding you to some place in particular. I'm having fun trying to figure this out. And it's so we can figure out, okay, where, what are we going to do? Maybe we're happy with the way the organizational culture is and we don't need to change anything. And maybe we want to make some changes. So I'm asking, how do we present ourselves to our members? I don't care about how we present ourselves to the world. How do we present ourselves to our members? What kind of organizational culture do we say we have? Do we say we have a very stable culture? Or do we say we have a very flexible culture? Okay, we say we're a flexible culture. And do we say we're mostly taking care of insider outsiders? Insiders. Okay. So if that's true, and I'm not sure if it's true.
Clan culture.
So we're claiming to have a clan culture, and according to this little group of people right here in this room, which may not be the opinion of everybody in the movement, But we've sort of concluded that we have mostly an adhocracy culture and claim to have a clan culture. I would ask you another question. I don't know to what extent you're familiar with this, but what kind of culture do you see our top leadership trying to produce for ISKCON?
Hierarchy.
I see that also. Do you notice that that's exactly the opposite? So I would agree with that. I would agree that our top leadership seems to me, officially speaking, to be going more and more in the direction of a hierarchy culture. Whereas actually ISKCON is functioning mostly on an adhocracy culture.
Perhaps they tend to do that because they might think that the movement will be more compact and more together.
I'm not looking at.
Organization will be prevented and it will stay together.
Probably.
No, I'm not saying that that's what
I do. I mean, I don't really know what the motives are. A good guess is thinking that this way ISKCON will be likely to still be around in 500 years or 1,000 years. And we'll be, like you say, we'll be a more coherent society, although we're spread all over the world, that if we make more standards and more rules and more linear and focus on the internal. All right, let's look at each one of those individually, and then we're going to look at some really far out things. Okay, so this is a hierarchy culture. The basis of a hierarchy culture is follow the rules. The main aspect of a hierarchy culture is follow the rules. Everything's formal. Everything's structured. There's procedures for everything. Now again, this we certainly have this in what areas?
Samskaras
and deity worship. Although that's not applied uniformly all over ISKCON, of course. But we do have procedures for deity. The emphasis is long term. We want to be stable over the long term. We want to be efficient. Efficient means that you get the job done with the least amount of trouble. You have the least amount of money, least amount of trouble, least amount of stress to get something done. That's what efficiency means. The way you be efficient, what's more efficient? To have rules and procedures that you always follow? Or to decide things on an ad hoc basis. Why?
To have predictions and know the outcomes and how to do it.
Yeah, you just know what to do. Okay, I see, this is what I do. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to have discussions about it. It's just what you do. The hierarchy culture, the culture is held together by the formal rules and policies. And the most important thing is that everything runs smoothly. So here, of course, they're looking at businesses. Success means dependable delivery, smooth scheduling, and low cost. So you do things cheaply, you're dependable, you're cheap, you're on time. Okay. Market culture. So market culture, again, is stable outside. So hierarchy was stable inside, market culture. So here, right, in the hierarchy, what was the main value again?
Follow the rules.
Follow the rules. In a market culture, the main value is keep your promises. Do we have a market culture in ISKCON? Do we have a keep your promises culture?
I don't know about that.
I don't think so.
I never can think of that as a value.
I don't think that's a really high value.
Well, the what we promise our rules is
there's that.
I'm not saying what we say we do. I'm saying what we actually do. Is there a very high organizational value of keeping your promises in this school?
No.
We say we value it highly. We say it's something that's really important to us.
We value time, place, and
service. So market culture is based on getting the job done. Very competitive, very goal-oriented, hitting your targets. We did have this at one time with book distribution, but that was still very innovative. Trying to win. outclass the competition. Remember we talked about this in the beginning, do we have a mission to throw everybody else out? And we were kind of, we're not sure if we really have that mission anymore. Are we really trying to just, you know, throw all the other religions out?
Did that make education? Academic education?
I'm lost. What about academic
education? If I want to throw everything else out.
Would I want to throw out academic education?
No, he's saying that you would throw out the market of other academic... in the realm of academics. I don't think we've hit that.
I don't think we've hit that we want to close all the other universities and only have Hare Krishna universities.
Or even scholarship.
I've never heard anyone preach like that. Of course, if we threw out all the other religions of the world and we were the only religions, then I suppose we would also throw out a lot of the universities. Yeah. Yeah, could be. I'm going to throw out the secular and the modern science.
Do what it takes us, though.
Okay, so we had with the hierarchy one was what?
Follow
the rules. And the market one is?
Keep
your promises. The adhocracy one is?
Do
whatever it takes.
Sounds kind of ghetto.
This is us.
Okay, this is an exciting, creative place to work. People take risks. Freedom is highly valued. We're interested in growing the organization. The emphasis is on growing the organization. What was the emphasis, let's see, in the market one? The emphasis was competitive and hitting targets. And here it's growing and getting new resources. Is this some of our emphasis? I think so. Held together by a commitment to experimentation and innovation, leading edge, new and unique products. Bless you. Do we claim that we have a unique product?
Yeah.
Hmm. Are we encouraged to take risks?
Yeah.
Okay. So the clan culture, the family culture, obey the norms. Norms are different than rules. What's the difference between norms and rules?
Norms are unwritten.
Norms are usually unwritten.
Yeah. We have clan culture in China.
Well, I think we claim to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think we claim to have a clan culture. So a fairly friendly place to work. People share a lot of themselves. It feels like an extended family. We certainly say that it's like that. I don't know if it's like that. Do we take good care of our human resources? We take good care of our people.
Yeah.
Is that our main emphasis, taking good care of our people?
Mm-hmm.
Training our people. Professional development means you're training your people. Is our main emphasis training our people?
Maybe
6 students.
Huh? 6 students.
6 students. Okay. 7 students.
Professional development.
Professional development means you're getting trained. You're getting trained for a livelihood. You're getting trained for a way to make money. You're getting trained for a way to contribute to the organization.
That's nice.
Okay. Cohesion and high morale, so people feel like they're really part of a team. The real emphasis is on teamwork and consensus, being sensitive to our customers, of course, people we preach to, and sensitive for the people. And we really share a lot of ourselves with high commitment. Now, there's certainly some of this that goes on in this country. But I wouldn't say that this is our primary organizational culture. We have some of all of them. We have some of all of the cultures, but I don't think this is our primary organizational culture. Although we complain about this a lot, that we'd like it to be like this. I think we often preach that it's supposed to be like this, and we'd like it to be like this. What also really interested me is when I took the test for organizational culture, I expected that I was going to want ISKCON to be an adhocracy, and what I found is that all the way I answered it was that I wanted ISKCON to be a clan culture, which really surprised me. Okay, here's a little summary. The clan culture, you're obeying the norms, you're following the traditions. How do you fit in with the family? With the hierarchy, you're following the rules. How do you fit in with the system? With adhocracy, you're pushing the envelope. You're trying new things. And there is, how are you different from others? How are you individual? For a market culture, then you want to see how much are you fitting the goals? How much are you fitting the people that you're preaching to? So, oops. Again, one is obeying norms, following the rules, keeping agreement, and doing whatever it takes. Then leadership. So in an adhocracy, be innovator, visionary, entrepreneur.
What's entrepreneur?
Entrepreneur is someone who starts a business from scratch, taking a lot of risk, often doing something in a new way. In clan, it would be a facilitator, a mentor, a parent. In hierarchy, a coordinator, a monitor, an organizer, and in market, a hard driver, competitor, and producer. Now, we talked about that one thing that organizational culture relates to is determining who's a member, right? How do we define membership? Remember, that was one of the criteria of organizational culture? Organizational culture tells you, what's the organization? What kind of personality does your... Basically, organizational culture tells you, what kind of personality does your organization have? Is it a loud person? Is it a quiet person? Is it a team player? Is it a leader? You know, right? Each of us have a personality. What's the personality of your organization? Now, some of the organizational culture is determined by how we decide who's a member. So I'm going to show you two radically different presentations about membership.
Abhisko. Two different.
Two radically different. One by Shiva Ramaswamy and one by Charu Prabhu of Utah. I don't want to talk about these at all. I just want to go through them right now. This is Shiva Ramaswamy's. So here he's saying that he's going to look at international society and Krishna consciousness. And society, people who have shared customs, laws, and organizations. So ISKCON is a global community of people having shared customs, laws, and organizations based on Krishna consciousness. And he's emphasizing shared, that they have to have common values. So he's giving an example of France. They have a constitution, laws, language, education, taxes. And then they have rights and obligations. And then individually they have faith, ethnicity, dress, profession, and opinions. So they don't have individual, they do not have, what French people do not have to have in common are individual rights and obligations. They have common societal rights and obligations. So they have individual rights and obligations which don't conflict with their societal rights and obligations. So a French citizen is someone who accepts the obligatory common rights of the French Republic. So rights and obligations. So we have individual rights and obligations which do not conflict with obligatory rights and obligations. And a member of ISKCON, this is his definition. A member of ISKCON is a devotee who accepts the rights and obligations that are common to all other members. That's his definition. This, by the way, is a very controversial presentation.
What are those rights
and obligations? So he's saying these are decided by the GBC in the form of the constitution and the laws. So he's saying if you follow ISKCON's constitution and laws, then you get the rights. And if you don't, you're not members. So how is he defining members? With the GBC. So if you follow the GBC rules, then you're a member. If you don't, you're not.
What about those who are neutral to GBC? People have neutrality.
Well, that's really easy.
I said I don't want to discuss this right now so much. I just want to go through. I already told you this was controversial. Now, this has been seen by many, many thousands of people. The other one hasn't. So here he's saying to be your obligation is you accept GBC as your authority. You're connected to ISKCON's line of authority. First time I visited there, he said to me, who's your GBC person? First question he asked me. You take Diksha only from ISKCON-approved gurus. You chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, and you don't divorce. Which is interesting. Okay, then give 10% of your income to the society, subject to the discipline and judicial system of ISKCON. Then he says, the laws and bylaws of ISKCON determine devotees' values and conduct in all aspects of their life, work, social status, and spiritual practice and aspiration. So this is his definition of a member. Yes, it is. That ISKCON's laws and bylaws would determine my value and conduct in all aspects of my life in order to be a member. Yeah, we're not sure, are we? Okay, that was our obligations. Now our rights. We have a right as being, we're connected with Prabhupada and the Parampara. We can reside, serve, or be employed on ISKCON property. And we can perform ceremonies and worship for members. Give class, become a guru, do samskaras. We can enjoy the samskaras.
The GBC members are not members
because they're not. Yeah, I know. I can be part of ISKCON initiatives. So his point is that the only people who should be allowed to get those benefits are the people who are also taking the obligations. So those are the only people who, if you want those benefits, you have to follow those rules. And then we could say, this is ISKCON. ISKCON is made up of people who are following those rules and getting these benefits. Now, then he asks, what about people who follow Prabhupada and Krishna but not the GBC? What about life members? He doesn't answer these questions, by the way. What about new devotees who haven't fully surrendered? What about people who are watching TV and playing football and going to movies breaking principles? What about people who were very surrendered in their youth, think of themselves as members, but they don't actually accept the obligations? He doesn't answer those questions. He just simply puts them forward. Okay, that's it.
You want an answer?
Yes. Okay. As I said, I didn't want to discuss that while we were showing it. What kind of organizational culture, if we were looking at the clan, the adhocracy, the hierarchy, and the market, was behind that presentation we just saw?
Hierarchy.
No. Definitely not. It was rules. It was all rules. Because the hierarchies follow the rules. The clan has followed the norms. It's different than follow the rules. He wasn't just saying follow the norms, he was saying follow. You got to follow all the rules. That was interesting because we identified Jivaramars as somebody who has high status internationally and somebody who himself is an innovator. Didn't we? We did, right? If you think for a minute, and don't give any names, but I'd like you to think for a minute of some people in ISKCON who are very high rule followers in terms of a hierarchy, who really follow the hierarchy, who just follow all the rules of the GBC, and they always just, they're a real rule follower, hierarchical type person. Are they international heroes in ISKCON? I mean, I can think of, I don't want to say who they are, but I can think of some specific people like that. I can't think of any of them who are internationally considered high status people.
Just in general, about the presentation of these things, maybe we also need to have a little bit of a staff
of showing these things?
Showing these presentations? If we clearly state that we don't judge and we don't make any I feel the need to mention that these sort of things might create in a situation for different people.
Absolutely. That's why you need to have colleges. And that's why I don't generally record these classes. I'm doing this just for Jai Krishna Prabhu. Because in a college, you're supposed to be able to look at these things. We're trying to learn the principles. We're trying to learn the principles, and hopefully that we're going to take roles in society's leadership. In order to learn the principles, you've got to talk about things that are difficult and uncomfortable. How in the world are you going to learn the principles otherwise? You can't. If I have to stay within the norms of the organizational culture, how in the world can I teach you about the organizational culture? I can't. I have to step out as if I'm an outsider looking in and saying this is what's going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, just that we are on the same
Well, I'm hoping everybody understands that.
Yeah, that's what I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
I'm
glad you said that. I'm hoping everybody understands. Again, I'm not saying that the way ISKCON is doing things is good or bad at this point. Of course, I have my opinion. It's not that I don't have any opinion. I'm not like a chair. I do have an opinion. And I'm sure that I'm indirectly expressing my opinion. But I don't see it like that. I see that if we're going to decide what we want ISKCON's organizational culture to be, then we've got to look again honestly at what it is. And part of looking honestly at what it is looking at what do we say it is compared to what it is. And what are the things that we value in our culture? So there we have an example of a leader who's espousing a hierarchical culture, but who himself personally is not an example of that. He's somebody that I happen to like and respect a lot, by the way. And if we look at, and I'm glad he's not an example of that, by the way. One reason I like going there is because he's not an example of that. Otherwise, it would drive me nuts. But I also see that the people who are examples of that do not tend to be international heroes. Again, that's not good or bad, but it gives me a good idea of what our organizational culture actually is. Yes?
Knowing Shivaram Swami a little bit, the way I perceive his presentation is not necessarily as an advocate of it, as much as perhaps this is also what we need. In other words, perhaps the way things are going, it is useful to remind people that following rules and being this kind of member of ISKCON is not a bad idea. This is something to...
We see in general among ISKCON's leadership, not only with Shivaram Swami, but in general, we see that there is concern about making ISKCON a more stable place that's more rule-bound. You know, we remember the early days of ISKCON when things were very contained. And it was very clear. You were a member or you were not a member. There wasn't this ambiguity about whether you're a member or not. And you knew that in order to be a member in those days, you had to live, you know, in the temple or next to the temple, and you had to follow all the rules, and you had to be in the system, and it was very clear. And today it's very unclear. Absolutely. As Tamal Krishna Maharaj would say, it was a fast train. You were on it or off it. And it's not clear anymore.
And it has been made not clear deliberately. This is a trend.
Oh, I would agree with you completely. There has been an effort, a very deliberate effort, to smudge the lines of membership and to be a more inclusive society. which certainly has benefits. But, you know, everything has its pros and cons. I don't think you can find an organizational culture that doesn't have its downside. It's just not like that in the material world. And my purpose in this class is not to either praise or criticize anybody or any system at all. If you're taking it that way, then I certainly don't intend it that way. But my purpose is that if we're going to be, hopefully if you're being educated here, you're going to be not only a member of ISKCON, but you're going to be hopefully giving some direction to ISKCON. Hopefully you're going to be some of the intelligentsia of ISKCON. In order to guide things, you have to know what they are. I mean, most people go on through life without even being aware that there is an organizational culture. They just figure this is the way things are and this is the way things are done. Or else they're saying, well, it should be done this way, it should be done that way, and they have no idea how to change it. And the only way to deal with an organizational culture is you've got to bring it to the surface and see what it is. And you've got to see, okay, what are we saying it is? What are we saying we want it to be? What is it actually? What would be the best culture to serve Srila Prabhupada? You're not going to find an ideal culture. Is that, are you feel more comfortable now?
Yeah, basically, my point is that we do not pursue the other systems, and that the position of others is like you're giving responsibility to a person who needs to be able to handle it. If this person is not able to handle it, then it needs to be the person that is able to do it. And I'm not like the whole, I'm just pointing out that.
I'm hoping that everybody in this room can handle it. My assumption is that everybody here can handle it. That's my assumption. I'm assuming, and hopefully I'm making the right assumption, I'm assuming that I'm dealing with mature people. I'm assuming that I'm dealing with mature and intelligent people. Who can handle being in an academic atmosphere where you challenge things and you bring things out to the front and you look at them and you ask hard questions. And you look at things. I mean, hey, this is nothing compared to the history class. These are the classes I was asked to teach. You know, I didn't ask to teach these classes. I didn't come and say I want to teach these classes. I was asked to teach these classes.
In history class, more like we talk about.
I mean, if you really want to talk about worrying about committing offenses and worrying about messing up people's faith and worrying about challenging people, don't go to the history class. I don't like that class. I cringe teaching that class. This class I enjoy. That class I don't enjoy. This class I find invigorating and exciting and hopeful. That class I find difficult and challenging in a negative way. That it really challenges my faith and it challenges me how to present ISKCON history accurately. Without messing up anybody else's faith. I haven't figured out how to do it. I try. You know, I always finish that class thinking, okay, why am I a member of ISKCON? Let's go through it again. You know, whereas I at least my feeling with this class is excitement and hope. And so if I appear to be offensive, I that's not my intention. Okay, I want to look at a very, very different, very, very different presentation about membership by Charu Prabhu. Now, one thing is that this presentation has quite a different audience. Shivaram Maharaj's presentation was designed for the GBC as an exploratory tool to facilitate discussion. It was not designed for public viewing, although it ended up getting out publicly. This presentation, on the other hand, was not only designed for the public, but it was designed for people who are not now members of ISKCON. So this is really a recruitment tool. I don't think Shivaram Maharaj's presentation was a recruitment tool. I can't imagine many people saying they wanted to become members of ISKCON after seeing his presentation. It was something designed for leaders. So here he starts out giving a little history. You know, part of some of Hindus, who are we? Some of Hindus are Vaishnavas, and Gaudiya Vaishnavas are part of Hindus. And look at what a wonderful organization we have, folks. Here's ISKCON Delhi. And look at this beautiful place. One of 400 branches worldwide. Here's another beautiful place. Wow, look, you can be a member of this organization. Look at these places. Wow, exciting. Whoa. Here we go. You can be a member of this organization. And now he's talking about the four main sampradayas. How we follow basically the same philosophy. He goes through the sampradayas. Nice little picture here of the sampradayas. There's a guru. Okay, now this is his commitment map. Now, for example, Shivaram Maharaj in that presentation, we were just looking at what we would call, I think they've changed their name now. They used to call it full-time devotees. I think they're changing it now to volunteers. But they also have different levels of membership. They have, you know, the volunteers, the congregations, I think they have four or five levels. And then the other one, he only detailed one of them. Here you see Charu is looking at five levels of membership. And by the way, if any are interested in teaching, Charu uses master teaching techniques in his presentations. So here you see he uses all C's, core, committed, congregation, crowd, and community. That's a memory technique. Core, committed, congregation, crowd, and community. So he calls the core the lay ministers. So that's somebody like me. Lay minister means you haven't gone through a formal process of training and ordination by the institution. We don't have a seminary. So an ordained minister in most religions is someone who goes to a particular seminary program. Something like here, you're getting a degree in theology. So in many religions, the only way you can be a minister or a priest is to get a degree in theology. When you look at the career opportunities for people with a degree in theology, it usually means that you either teach theology, you become a chaplain in a university, or you become a minister. So most people who get a degree in theology are becoming a minister. So we don't have that in ISKCON. We don't require that in order to be a temple president you have a degree in theology. We don't require that in order to be a pujari or in order to give Bhagavatam class you have a degree in theology. We don't require that in order to do samskaras you have a degree in theology. So we don't have a specific institutional process for ordaining ministers. Of course, we have the Gayatri Diksha. But, you know, hey, you can go out and start a temple even without first initiation. You can go out and start a temple, have a pitcher of panchatattva, and preach to people and basically act as a minister without even first initiation. So anyway, it's called lay ministers. Then the committed he calls maturing members. Congregation he calls members. Crowd he calls regular attenders. And then community he calls unchurched occasional attenders. So community would be people who come when? Janmashtami. Regular attenders are people who come Sunday feast. Then the congregation are people who we would call the members, people who do some service. Probably. I'd say that maturing members would probably be people who are really making a commitment. Those are people who are starting to chant 16 mountains, follow the principles. I'd say the members are more probably people who are volunteering. They're not only coming on Sunday, but they're doing some service for the society. Let's see how he defines them. Now, what's his organizational culture, folks? Clan. At least that's what he claims. I haven't been to Utah. I don't know. But he's claiming that in his temple, his organizational culture is a clan. This is his claim. Did we say that we often preach like this? That often in ISKCON we claim that our organizational culture is a clan.
Yeah.
So he may be following this pattern, and it may actually be a clan in his temple. Again, I just have no idea at all.
So this is an actual clan carried out in Utah?
Yes.
In Salt Lake City?
Correct. Okay, so the temple is a family. We want you to be a member. And if you're not a member of the family, you're an orphan. Whoa. Okay. So here he's giving analogies. He says if you believe in Krishna, you're part of the universal church, but you've got to choose a local temple. He uses a lot of Christian language because most of the people he's preaching to are Christian. This is very Christian language. Words like universal church, words like invisible church, pastor, these are very Christian terms. This is not a presentation that you would give to Hindus. He's giving this presentation to local Christians. More to Mormon Christians, mostly. Okay, he's saying that unless you're part of a local church, there's a lot of commands of the Gita you're not going to be able to obey. Now, it's interesting to me that he uses a Gita verse to tell you that you should be a member. Basically, he's telling you you're going to have it hard to work in devotion unless you're the member of a local temple. So he says, our goal is that at the end of this class, this is also a master teacher who tells you what the goal of the class is. By the end of this class, I'm going to commit myself both to Krishna and I'm going to commit myself to the temple family. So why should you commit? So if you're just a floating believer, right? So he's giving a little story here about a traveler who looks for wealth. But as soon as you come home, all your troubles go away. So in the same way, when you're part of the family, then you feel that you have shelter. So why are we a family? And again, he's using these great techniques. Our future, our statement, our strategy, our structure. What is he talking about? His organizational culture, isn't he? Isn't this all the stuff we've been talking about today with organizational culture? Yes. Did any of you learn anything today? So he's saying, join our family and then we will share the same organizational culture. Now he's going to go through it step by step. Now again, I do not know if he lives this or not. I don't know. But his presentation is very good. This is somebody who understands organizational culture. He's bringing it out. He's saying, here it is. This is our culture about this. This is our culture about this. Let's go back and look at these things. This is what we're looking at as far as culture. How we do it. And he's also talking about structure, which we'll talk about tomorrow. What's our organizational structure? So future. So here he's talking about we all have a future, we're eternal. And our future is we're all going back to Godhead. That's our goal. So his mission statement, remember we talked about mission statements, do we want to outlast the competition, do we want to have a niche market? What kind of goal is he talking about? Is he talking about an organizational goal? What goal is he talking about?
Individual
goal. So that does this fit with the clan culture? All right, let's look at the four. Because he's claiming to have a clan culture. Okay, this is another part of your future. You're not going to have any fear. You're sure you're going to go back home, back to God. You don't have to worry about it. If only it was as simple as just joining a temple, and then you'd have to worry about going back to home, back to Godhead. Okay, you're going to give up all fear. You're not going to have any peace. You'll be confident that you're not the material body. You're going to actually know who is God. In other words, instead of just making up some idea of God, you're going to actually know who is God. Your family will be benefited. So not only are you going to go back to Godhead, you're going to know who is God, your family's going to be benefited. And you'll never lose anything. All right? Whatever you gain in Krishna consciousness, your eternal gain. George Harrison there. All right. You'll be able to find happiness. You'll be able to find your purpose in life. This is really sweet. So we're going to know and love Krishna. We're going to have harmony in our life. We'll have a clear conscience. We'll have life and peace, help with weakness. You'll have purpose, confidence, security, power and strength, fulfillment and freedom. Nice, huh? It's a fact. Definitely. I find these presentations in general, and this one in particular, to be very powerful. Now, what's interesting to me about this presentation is he's presenting what will happen if you join the temple. But what he's presenting is what will happen if you become Krishna conscious. So he's presenting, these are all the things that will happen if you become Krishna conscious, and he's saying the way to achieve them is by joining the temple, is by becoming a member. And he's not just pushing you to become a member of ISKCON. He's encouraging you to become a member of not just ISKCON in a global sense, but of your local temple. So he's very much equating becoming Krishna conscious with becoming a member of the local temple. Now, if you notice, again, Shiva Ram Maharaj's presentation was for a completely different audience. But you notice when he talked about your rights and obligations, what kind of rights did he talk about?
You can be generally.
Yes. So you can see he was looking at it from a management point of view. And here, Charu is looking at this from a preaching point of view. He's not telling people, you know, if you join ISKCON, then you can be a pujari. Okay, now he's also saying, because he's just preaching basic philosophy here. Our problem is we want to be the controller. Krishna's already taken care of your problem. Just accept liberation. He's got a little poem. I wonder if he sings it. That'd be cool if he sang it, huh?
Was the temple in Utah, was that?
The one with the llamas.
There were a couple of temples, and I think Utah was one of those areas. Is it
one?
Yeah,
is it one of the paint festivals?
Yeah, they have the paint festival.
Is it the one which is like everywhere?
Which is what?
No,
Yeah, it's a complete Vedic.
I'd say that both Charu and Shiva Ram Maharaj are definitely innovative, flexible people. They've both done a lot of innovation in their community.
And they've had an opening of the temple, Mormons came and see.
They have a lot of Mormons who volunteer in the temple. A lot.
And they got money from the government.
They get money from the government. They did a lot of volunteers from people who are Mormons.
There's not that many devotees there.
I don't think.
When we went, there was, I think, just him and his wife.
No, there's more than one.
We didn't see.
I know it's not a very big community. At least it wasn't last time I knew. Okay, so this is interesting. He's saying, don't ask what Krishna can do for you. Now is section two, the Krishna temple statements. What's the purpose and the faith and lifestyle statement of the temple? So this is our mission. Okay, the mission, where does this fit? This mission statement. Which culture is that in?
Democracy.
Which
Okay, so I want to bring people, so that's talking about getting people from outside. I want to have membership in the family, and then I want to develop them. I want to give them, remember we're talking about professional development? I want to give them professional development, equip them for their service in the temple, equip them for their life mission in the world. So that is all again.
Oh, is that a...
It's all plan again.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Other than bringing people to Krishna consciousness, everything else here is plan. I want you to become a member in the family. You become mature in the family. And I give you the training and the development for you to become mature. I'm going to help you. Again, you know, I don't know how much this is real. Let's hope it's all real. I don't know. I'm not vouching for his... I'm not criticizing his program. I'm not vouching for his program. I'm not here as a advertiser for his program. Okay, purpose statement. So here again, you see as this brilliance. Centering... this is just so... This is the way to teach folks. Such a good example. Look at this. He's got the C's and the S's. And he's got this parallel construction. To center on Krishna in love is sadhana. To connect with devotees in love is sangha. To cultivate spiritual maturity is shiksha. To contribute to the temple is seva. To communicate Krishna consciousness is sankirtan. That's nice. I mean, that is really, really nice. That's, you know, A+. Okay, again we see here, what organizational culture is he mostly in? Mostly clan again. The only thing he has that's external is the last one. So he's got a little bit external, and mostly it's all internal members. Okay, and here he's talking about the difference between sadhana and seva, to celebrate and to demonstrate.
Look at you, they all work.
Amazing, isn't it? Must be a very intelligent person. To communicate, to assimilate, to educate. So this one, here he was talking about receiving, and here he's talking about giving. So here you're giving. We exist to celebrate Krishna's presence. Unique individual, to celebrate. He's got celebrate bigger. Can you see that? To celebrate our eternal connection with him through loving service. Celebrate is a larger font. To communicate Krishna's message. So he is talking about preaching. Now this is interesting. We believe our temple must grow larger and smaller at the same time. You remember the adhocracy, and is especially talking about expanding. The market is talking about expanding by pushing everybody else out of the way. And the adhocracy is talking about expanding by being innovative. So through book distribution, to educate, to demonstrate Krishna's love through seva. Remember he talked, what did he say seva is? To do service for the local temple. That's how he defines seva, to contribute to the local temple. Now this is also really cool. He says, everyone is a minister, everything you do is important, and you're all perfect in something. He has a lot of presentations about this. You know, find your own talent, you're important, you're an individual. He's talking about the society of devotees. What do we believe? So here he's giving what is our basic philosophy. Now here he speaks again in Christian terms, temperance and continence. Doesn't mention gambling. So temperance means you don't take intoxication, and continence means celibacy. Autonomy of the temple, that each temple is a separate unit. And he asks for 10% of income. Notice that Shiva Ramar has also asked for 10% of income. Okay, temple strategy. So he says, we don't bicker with other people. We try to see common ground with other religions. So he's saying here, we're not, what? We don't have what kind of culture? Which kind of culture do we not have, is he saying? Market, he's saying. We don't have a market culture. You notice the clan and market are opposite. Saying we're not competing with other religions. So he's looking that we're going to be one along the common ground for his... Now he's just looking at the people in there. He's talking about the local problems. Now you can come to the temple. Here he's talking about how each temple's independent. That we're going to give you hospitality. You can even come to visit India.
We become GBC controlled.
He doesn't talk about that, does he? In fact, what is he saying is the opposite. He keeps he has several slides here about the temples are autonomous. Mm-hmm. So he's de-emphasizing what? Yes, he's de-emphasizing the vertical. He's de-emphasizing the connection with the worldwide Hare Krishna movement in this presentation. He's de-emphasizing, okay, you're going to have to follow the rules of an international governing body. He's saying, look, this is a local temple, this is autonomous, we're independent here. And now he has this nice color thing. Oh, no, not at all. And you might wonder why. I mean, you might wonder why he feels that he wants to emphasize that the temple is independent, that the temple is autonomous. You know, what does he feel that why does he feel the people will respond to that more favorably? I don't know. I'd have to ask him. Now he's just going through, I don't know.
Feeling of belonging.
Well, but he's de-emphasizing the feeling of belonging to an international community. He's emphasizing belonging to a local temple. I mean, I can guess why. I can guess because otherwise the people say, yeah, I'm a member of ISKCON, but I don't do anything for the local temple. That's my guess. But it's strictly a guess. I haven't asked him what his feeling is. Which is the kind of thing Shiva Ramar talked about also. People who say, yeah, I'm members, but they don't actually do anything. Okay, I want to go through this quickly because it's about 6 minutes. So now he's going through what are the levels. You know, he talked about these levels. Now he's going through them in details. So when you have just the membership level, you're committing to Krishna, the temple family. You say, I'll do some work for the temple. When you're in your maturity level, then you're actually following the process. This is his membership thing. Ministry level, you're not only following process, you're serving God. These are the three inner ones, mm-hmm. Ministry, maturity, and members. So members, you're doing some service. And what I see that this is almost the three levels that Krishna gives in chapter 12. Serve me with love, follow the process, and work for me. So he's saying the members work for me, work for Krishna, the maturity level, they're actually following the process. And then you have people who are actually at the ministry level. Then missions level, when you go out and share with others. So he's taking that as a higher level. Now he's talking about the structure of the temple, that it's a fellowship, harmony, unity, that we don't have voting. Says we're not going to have any voting here. We're like a family. We operate on relationships, not rules. Okay. What organizational culture is he saying we're not? We're not a bureaucracy. Saying we're not a bureaucracy. We're not functioning by rules. We're functioning by relationships. We're a body, not a business, an organism, not an organization. He said spiritual gifts, not elected offices. So elected offices is, again, what organizational culture? Elected offices. Bureaucracy. He's saying we don't have a bureaucracy.
Why is he going into so many details? Because generally people don't ask for anything.
But I bet you that's a lot of people's fear. I bet you a lot of people are afraid. I don't want to join an organized church. It's a bureaucracy. It's going to have a lot of levels. Yeah. And I like this. He says the people are the ministers and the pastors are the administers. So, of course, they have to have people running the show. But he said we're the ministers and the administers. And the temple is a flock cared for by spiritual leaders. All right, now here he also has obligations. He's saying you've got some obligations if you want to be a member. But you notice he's not putting it in terms of rules. He's not saying that the way to be a member is you have to follow the rules of the GBC. He's putting it in terms of family things. I'll protect the unity of the temple. I'll share the responsibility of my temple. I'll serve the ministry of my temple. I'll support the outreach of my temple. And you notice those are all parallel English constructions. You notice also that it's all of my temple. Okay? So this is a way he's bringing you not just, oh, you want to be a devotee of Krishna, but you want to be and not just a member of ISKCON. I'm going to be a member of my temple. But to really be a member, he's pushing that if you really want to be a member of ISKCON, you've got to be associated with the local temple. And these are the kind of things that you're going to do. So these are if you want to be any kind of a member, you have to agree to do these things. Now you can see he also talked about that the maturity level, you've got to follow the four regulative principles. All right. So that was a very different view of membership with a very different organizational culture.
But perhaps they make a distinction between member and someone who comes to the temple. Because like for the
Chinese Haigor, did you watch that presentation?
Yeah, but the point is...
No, not yeah, but I'm going to ask you right now. Did you watch that presentation? I know I went through it very fast. But did you watch it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, if you watched it, then what you would have seen...
Whoa. 90 slides.
Isn't that cool? Yes, that's why I went through it very fast. Was this... which he had at the beginning and he had again at the end.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, so it's not perhaps he's making a distinction. He's making a very clear distinction. And he's not just saying, Shivaram Maharaj asked these questions. Shivaram Maharaj asked, what about all these other people? Okay, so here, Charvaprabhu is explaining, okay, this is this people, these are this people. Now, again, Shivaram Maharaj in Hungary actually has something like this. He has, I think, 4 or 5 steps also. So he has different levels, and he calls them by different names, and then he explains what they are, what they're expected to do, what are their obligations at each level. So he's definitely distinguished. All right, I hope you've understood something about A, organizational culture in general. B, I think we've examined, I don't think we've come to a firm conclusion, but I think we've examined a little bit about ISKCON's organizational culture. I think to really talk about ISKCON's organizational culture, we would have to spend a long, long time. You know, this is an introductory. I don't expect in 3 hours that you're going to become scholars of organizational culture. But I think we have some idea. Good. I'm glad you found it interesting. Let's try to cover a lot of material in a short amount of time. Tomorrow we're going to be looking at organizational structure. If possible, I would like you to read everything here. There's nothing academic. It's very short. It's mostly outlines. It's very easy to read. Lesson 7. There's lots of white space. Very easy language. Some of this, by the way, was written by me. Let me just go over what this is so you know what you're reading.